There's nothing you could do.
Remember how that was the song for Aragorn?
I had entirely forgotten that.
Did you remember that the credit song for Aragorn was Keep Holding On by Avril Lavigne? Like, it wasn't just that that was a popular song. Uh-huh. That was recorded, I think, for the movie.
Oh, wow. Like, just fucking amazing.
Remember how relevant Avril Lavigne was for a while?
In 2006? That doesn't sound right. She was more relevant in, like, 2004.
I don't know. Imagine they'd scored the whole movie like that. Like A Knight's Tale. You ever see A Knight's Tale?
I love A Knight's Tale.
It's like, that's the one where it's like medieval times, but it's like got a lot of classic rock in it, right?
Yeah, but it's like all classic rock soundtrack. I love the soundtrack for A Knight's Tale. I just think it's amazing.
Oh, man. But like just all Avril Lavigne. Like
all Avril Lavigne, Aragorn might just actually make Aragorn the film better.
It's like, all right, Aragorn. We got a lot of training to do. Let's get to work. And then just slam. Hey, you, I don't like your girlfriend. He's like
he's practicing magic with Jeremy Irons. And
man, they had like 4/5 of a good cast.
They had a half decent cast.
Yeah, it was like
Jeremy Irons, Ed Spielers was okay. He was.
Yeah.
He hasn't really done anything since, I don't think.
Yeah, he really hasn't.
Cheemin Hunsu is in it.
I forgot he was. Yeah, that guy's always good. He's always great.
I love Aragorn because it is notable for being the last film to be released on VHS.
That's right.
In the U.S.
Do they like release new movies on VHS? I'm sure there's like second-hand whatever publishers who like record stuff onto VHS tapes and release them, because I'm sure a lot of parts of the world you still only have VHS.
I would love to grab like a VHS copy of Mad Max.
Yeah, like just
the new Mad Max, and just like have it kicking around, and somebody be like, "What the fuck is this?" And I'd be like, "That is my VHS of Mad Max." It's like,
I had to order it from Yemen, but
Yemen, or was it Oman? I can never tell.
Oh, man. That movie was so weird because it had all the elements of a good movie, and then they just shit the bed on it.
Totally. Just, like, absolutely shit the bed every step of the way.
I think I remember the first part where I realized, like, man, this movie is just not going to do it. Is, like, remember how in the book, there's like half the book is like him living as a farm boy and then finding, is it Sapphira or Sapphira? We used to argue about this in high school.
I always said Sapphira.
I always said Sapphira too. I don't know.
The purposes of this podcast, let's stick with Sapphira.
Sapphira.
Yeah.
Anyway, but like, you remember how much time they devoted to him like raising what was essentially a wild dragon and not really knowing what was going on in the movie. She flies up, fucks off into a fully grown dragon, comes back down to the ground, and is like, "What's up? I'm Sapphira."
Skip that part.
Just totally, they crammed like more exposition in those 5 seconds than like George R. R. Martin writes in an entire book. She's like, "What's up? I'm Sapphira. That sword is the they reveal what happened with his sword like really early, like how it was actually." Oh fuck! Whose sword was it again? The dude, the bad dude. I haven't read the books in so long. Anyway, it was his father's lightsaber. I mean, sword.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh man, I remember like when everyone was like, "Wait a minute, eldest is just The Empire Strikes Back,"
and everybody went, "No, it. Wait,
it totally is." And that's,
oh shit.
The movie must not have done well. It made like a whatever amount. Like, it's not like it was a bomb, but like, I remember hearing that they were like, "We're not going to make another one of these. Like, it's not going to happen at all."
I have to say, there was one thing that I enjoyed about the movie, and that was that Sapphira's wings had like these like feather-like scales. And I thought that was really cool at the time. I just thought it was pretty neat. No real purpose.
Yeah.
None at all, but it looked cool, so props, I guess.
Aragorn's production design was pretty good. Didn't they, like, go, you know, try to ride the the whole Lord of the Rings wave. I think they actually did shoot in New Zealand, and they did Weta Digital. Like, they just did the whole thing. Okay, no, Hungary. But it was still, like, totally trying to ride on Lord of the Rings coattails. Trying to sneak another fantasy epic in there.
Yeah, totally.
But, like, remember how, like, instead of the dragon marks, they had E's?
Remember that? Yeah. It was supposed to be like a scale mark on your hand.
Yeah, it's like a shiny scale.
It was like kind of cool. It was supposed to be like a white scar almost, but it would like glow when you did magic. And he's got like this dragony E on his hand.
It's an E. Lower get it? E. Get it? For Aragorn.
Aragorn.
That's the title of the movie.
I just think, remember at the end, John Malkovich, who was, like, he was cast to do, like, a 5-minute role.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was literally just the stinger at the end, and then they never hired him again because they never made any more of these fucking movies.
I think there was, like, 3 short scenes. None of them was longer than 2 minutes.
Does he even have any lines?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Yeah, he talks about, I don't know.
Something. It doesn't matter.
Ugh.
But yeah, and then he's got his own like spiky E, and it's like this doesn't make any sense, you guys. There's a limit.
I'm calling bullshit.
Know your limit, play within it. Like should be for writers too. Like, man, the movie seemed caught between trying to like, it was probably the worst time to make a fantasy movie because mm-hmm. Lord of the Rings had just come out. And everyone was just loving it. And so they tried to juggle aping Lord of the Rings with, there were some people who were trying to like get some shit in from the book, but the book was really long. And the movie's, how long is it? It's like it's barely an hour and a half. So like that's not a lot of time to fit in like a whole goddamn tome of a 16-year-old's fantasy epic.
Yeah.
And they just ended up shoving everything in and be like, we'll fix it in the next 3 movies that we're never going to get to make.
Yeah.
That was like a weird, that was a weird phase in the youth literature. You can track a lot of weird trends through like the young adult section at Chapters in Sudbury.
The young adult section of Chapters is a strange, fascinating place.
Like, I don't know when it started. I feel like it may have probably started with our generation, like the Harry Potter generation. Because, like, mm-hmm. no one really wrote a lot of books for kids.
It would be slightly before. It would be in the 90s. I would say it would be in the 90s because we had that. We had a couple of like, pretty interesting epics.
Yeah.
In the 90s. There was, like, what was the one where it was, like, vaguely Celtic roots and he would collect, circles with the cross within it. Made of different metals for magic.
I remember someone lent me that when I was like 20 and I never read it. I think I know what you're talking about though.
Great series, but like they started around then, and there's some other pretty good ones around that time.
I feel like Harry Potter was really the archetypal like young adult series, and then everyone just started every publishing house just started shitting out young adult series all over the place.
It was so much more popular than the rest of them, and it was like slightly worse than a lot of the other ones. Not gonna lie, but they started like piling onto that, and it just got worse and worse.
I only read a few of them actually. I was kind of a purist. I read, like, Harry Potter. There was those Pendragon books. Remember those? Remember Pendragon?
The Arthur Pendragon books? Yeah.
The ones where it's like it's a kid, but he's, like, shifting through worlds and shit. Yep. And I barely remember any of it. But he's, every book is, like, a different dimension or some shit. And he's got to find, like, doors. And, like, one thing I thought was really cool is that whenever you find, like, a door... Mm-hmm. There's always like these evil demons guarding it, and no matter what shape they take in the world to make sense, they're always black and they always have yellow eyes.
Yeah.
So like that's pretty cool.
Yeah, we got some internal consistency.
I actually spent like half an hour on the bus the other day trying to remember which young adult series I remembered having like a magic key That's all I had in my head was like, it had something to do with a magic key, and it wasn't
was
Pendragon.
Was it Keys to the Kingdom?
It was fucking Keys to the Kingdom, and it took me way longer.
I'm a huge Garth Nix fan. I'm actually rereading the Abhorson trilogy right now because I found out that there's two extra books that he wrote in the last, like, 3 years, and so I'm like, I gotta catch up on this shit.
Yeah, because something in my head triggered a memory of reading a scene where whoever has got the hour hand is like stabbing him with it, and he says, hold off the hour hand for a minute. And I was like, what the fuck is that from? I remember reading that like 20 years ago. And like it was Keys to the Kingdom by Garth Nix.
Yeah. Who also had the Seventh Tower series, which was... like it had like crystals as its magic form. It was weird. Yeah.
Looking at my bookshelf, that's just what I have in like my house in Sudbury. There's like three different series I haven't even touched.
Oh yeah.
There's Shannara, which I haven't cracked.
Oh my god, I read way too many Shannara books to be good for anybody. Like those things become caustic after a while. Yeah. It's just It devolves into utter garbage.
I don't know which ones I've got. Let's see. The Scions of Shannara, Elf Queen of Shannara, and the Druid of Shannara. So what is that, like the core trilogy? I have no idea.
You're missing one.
Okay.
You're missing the first book, Sword of Shannara.
Yeah. Well, that's... I picked up so many different bits and pieces of fantasy series over the years that never and like read the one.
Yeah,
like I've read so many. That's how I read Animorphs. Like I read through them all piecemeal, like picking books from all over the place, and I did that with so many different series. I got this one I would read like the fifth book and then have no idea what else was going on.
Yeah,
especially if the authors didn't keep their shit consistent. You know how like you can sometimes each book has to kind of work as a standalone piece.
Yeah.
If you give a shit about that, which a lot of authors didn't. Yeah, there truly was a golden age of young adult series, which has kind of devolved. Like, there was Harry Potter, and then there was a whole bunch of derivative magic stuff. I remember, like, Septimus Heap and fucking...
I read the Septimus Heap
and
books.
All that shit. A lot of them were actually pretty good, but like a lot of derivative Harry Potter shit. And then Twilight came out, and it was all vampires.
And then we had the supernatural phase.
Yeah, and now it's like halfway between Maze Runner and Hunger Games, like the Divergent, the Divergent, you know, whatever that is.
I'm not gonna lie, there was actually a very good one in that genre that came out. Not too long ago,
it's dystopian young adult fiction now.
The dystopian one. There's a series called Red Rising, and it's dystopian. Takes place on Mars to begin with. Human race has been split up into seven sub races, corresponding with colors. Gold being the highest and the epitome of human achievement. And they elevate one of the lowest forms into the highest form by like surgery and stuff. And he infiltrates the society and like takes it down from the inside. It was actually really good. I'm not going to lie.
They're doing the movie.
They might be doing the movie.
Well, apparently they got Mark Forster to do it.
Okay, cool.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
But like my favorite thing about the trends was that how much cover aping there was.
Oh yeah!
Like no one held a candle to how much aping of Twilight there was. Like, remember when you used to walk into chapters and every fucking book in that section was a black book with some shit on the front, like some white and red shit.
Oh shit! There's a striking red apple. Is it a striking red rose on a black? Maybe it's a striking drop of blood.
Oh my god! Like I've read some of the Twilight books. No, I've never read any one of them fully, but I have skimmed. They're not terrible books.
I have read the core, four? Three.
Yeah. Oh, you know what was bad? Three the Host. Four. I stopped reading The Host. That one was actually pretty bad. And it was
I thought it was better than Twilight.
Was it? I just maybe I had a knee-jerk reaction. I was like, man, this seems like a ripoff of Animorphs.
Yeah, it definitely was a ripoff of Animorphs. Yeah, but
so maybe I just got angry. But it's not like the Twilight books are terrible books. They just started, like, this whole wave of really shitty young adult literature. Like, I can't think of a single other even remotely redeemable series that emerged from the, you know, the vampire teen era of, like, what would that have been, like, 06 to 10-ish?
Maybe to 12.
Maybe it's, yeah, 12 was when the last one movie came out, but I feel like it started to peter off. And then 12 was when the Hunger Games came out.
And then we get our dystopian.
God, what's it going to be next?
I have no idea. It's exciting.
It's either going to be post-apocalypse or maybe like steampunk will make a resurgence. Or
I'd be okay with the resurgence of steampunk.
Let's bring back Merry England. Let's have a young adult series set in like idyllic Robin Hood times.
Okay.
And just do that.
Nice.
Have like a sexy teen Robin Hood.
Yeah.
And he's like, we're taking another kick at this dead horse.
He's all angsty because he's not giving enough to the poor from the rich. The rich aren't rich enough for him. They're like, ugh, these rich aren't rich enough to give to the poor. my cat's taking too much of the.
Instead of wearing green, he has like a green tattoo or some shit.
Oh, for sure.
They have to fuck with it just enough to make it like marketable. But yeah,
he's got an arrow on his wrist.
Man, I could write an essay like tracking young adult literature, that weird ass trend. But like, Aragorn, the inheritance cycle, as he insists on calling it, it's like just say it's four books, man. Just doesn't have to be a cycle. But it did kind of stand apart because like, as many gripes with the series that I have, he did write Aragorn when he was like 16, right?
He was 16.
He was like very young and actually put like a decent amount of work into it. One of the weird things I think he does is he writes longhand. Like, he doesn't type anything. He writes his drafts out longhand.
Are you serious?
Yeah, well, like sitting under trees and shit. Apparently that's something he does. And
that doesn't surprise me at all.
That's one of the reasons Brisinger took so fucking long, as he was writing it out under a tree. Can you at least
I can't write today. It's stormy.
Chris, can you dictate? We hired a guy to type out. Just sit up in the tree and dictate your novel to this guy we hired to type it. This will take a lot faster.
This is called a tablet. You can use a stylus on it and straight up write, and it'll just turn it into letters.
Even J.R.R. Tolkien would have been like, get the fuck inside and get on your typewriter. Be a professional.
Get your shit together, son.
That's absolutely what he did. I remember I respect to him for writing so young, and also respect for abandoning his like title trend. Remember when everything was going to be called E something? It was like every title is going to be a six-letter word beginning with E, and then he's like, nah, that's stupid. Fuck that.
Fuck it. Brisinger.
Brisinger. Try pronouncing that, you fucks. what do you got that's so hot for young adults? It's Brisinger. It's got an R in the end.
Brisinger.
It's the book with the golden dragon on the front.
Yeah.
But like, I remember this blog where it's like Christopher Paolini's shitty prose, and it just has the worst examples. Like, I feel like there's one, the one scene where he like rides, I've already forgotten how we're pronouncing it, Saphira,
yeah,
to the edge of the like atmosphere or some shit.
Yeah.
And it's just the most overblown piece of writing I've ever read. And it's shit like, the sound of 1,000 screaming wolves filled his ears as the thing rushed and... I was like, come on, man. Just like, you got to start jerking off before you write this. Like, it's really... You got to get that out of your system. Just edit this shit. It's like...
You're what, 18 at this point? Come on, man. You know how to do this.
It's like...
You got this, man. You fuck it. You can jerk off under the tree. We're okay with that.
I write my novels longhand because I'm jerking off with the other hand. Under a tree.
Under a tree.
I'm a peer of the great.
Why is that? Why is all this dead grass under this tree?
Like, it stands, it's really telling that his later books are the ones that are more obviously like adolescent.
Yeah, weirdly enough.
It's like post-success, it's like George Lucas syndrome, right? After you get successful, they stop editing your shit. And then you just like, all it just comes stream of consciousness out of your brain. And everyone's like, wow, you're actually, this is nonsense.
Oh, this sucks.
It's the whole, oh, man.
Doesn't it? This does.
Did you suck the whole time? And you were just getting filtered by, like, you're vastly more talented.
You got me.
Wasn't it his wife? I feel like it was George Lucas's vastly more talented wife that, like, filtered all this bullshit.
Yes. She was the editor for New Hope.
Oh, yeah.
And she edited together basically like anybody else would have just, you know, completely made a piece of shit with the scenes that he shot. But she, I don't know, she's a genius.
There's a fantastic Patton Oswalt routine where he talks about science fiction. He's like, any one of your jerk-off male science fiction masterpieces was probably, they're all directed by men and edited by women, which means they're directed by women.
Yes.
Like, the editor is just like, here, now let me fix this into something coherent.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm ripping off Patton Oswalt. Let's go. maybe that was, I'm not sure what the movie's problem was, just juggling too much shit. Who directed it? I forgot to check.
Stephen Fangmeyer.
Who doesn't even have a picture on his Wikipedia page.
In his directorial debut.
He's a visual effects supervisor. He's not actually a director. Like, that's what he did for, like, 20 years before this.
He worked on some good movies.
He did work on some good movies. And, like, Aragorn had some pretty stunning visual effects.
That's the only thing he's ever directed in Aragorn. Man,
that's quite telling.
Yep.
It's like... Oh, I love when careers do that. Like, you're looking at someone's page, and it's like they wrote one thing, and it was such a piece of shit that they never stuck their toe in again. Like, never again.
Yeah. Can we take a moment to talk about how his name is Aragorn, which is so fucking close to Aragorn?
I always thought it was the dragon, but with an E.
Well, that too. That too. There are so many just, like...
It's too close to Aragorn. Like, there's so many things in... Like, Arya is just a direct lifting of a name from another fantasy series.
Yep.
Man, he has such shitty names.
Game of Thrones is, like, 20 years old at this point.
Galbatorix. Durza. This sounds like the fantasy novel I wrote when I was 10. The lead characters of which were called Cran and Gartheo. And that's about the same amount of effort as he put into his character name. In fact, I remember pronouncing it Aragorn. Like, I insisted it was pronounced Aragorn because I thought, did he just say dragon without the fucking D? It's just an E.
I had already read Lord of the Rings by this point, by the time that Aragorn came out.
And I'd read just it multiple times.
It was I couldn't not call it. I called him Aragorn for
It's like
for the first three fucking books. I'm like, oh wait, it's not Aragorn. Shit.
Man, like I think I just have like genetic knowledge of Lord of the Rings at this point.
Oh yeah.
It's like I'm like a butterfly flying across the Great Lakes and turning where there was a mountain a million years ago. Because it's still in my DNA to remember the whole plot of Lord of the Rings. Because, like, my dad had read those books to us at least, like, three times before we could even read. Although, like, when did I learn to read? I learned to read really, really young. My parents used to brag about it. I think I was a year old when I learned how to read.
I was reading, like, pretty early, too.
Yeah, so, like, my parents always used to bring that shit up. Like, yeah, my fucking son read at one.
I read Lord of the Rings for the first time in grade 3. You?
I think I read, I definitely had been listening to it. My dad read it for since I was born.
Nice.
But.
So you can't quite quantify that. It's just there. It's there from the earliest times.
Pre-life.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
But, one of my genuinely cherished childhood memories is my dad reading the bit where they're fleeing the Shire. and the Nazgul has almost caught up with them. Yeah. And I remember lying in my bed and holding my breath because of how anxious I was about that part in the story.
Amazing.
And this wasn't it. This was not the first time I'd heard the books either. This was like the second or third time.
Yeah.
And then I did it one round. I did the whole thing one round. And we never got sick of it. Like, it's not like this was like some weird kind of indoctrination. Actually, no, it totally was.
Totally is.
It totally was my indoctrination into, like, instead of, like, I'm like River Phoenix, and my parents, instead of being into a weird cult, they were just really into Star Trek and Lord of the Rings. So I just, from the get-go, I was all in. Yeah, like, I read the whole things out loud once, and my dad did it a whole bunch of times. We always told him he should actually record an audiobook of it.
Yeah,
I don't think he got around to do it. He did that for Winnie the Pooh one time. He actually recorded and mixed together a really decent audio version of a lot of. I think it was The House at Pooh Corner.
Oh, nice,
man! I should dig that up. He's definitely still got some CDs. Because like it was really good. That's one ambition I really have, is to do audiobooks. I don't know if I have that kind of timber though.
Yeah.
You got to be like a British sounding American guy with a deep voice. That's like the very specific kind of voice they hire to do audiobooks.
My favorite audiobooks are usually done by like Kenneth Branagh or something.
Yeah.
I love when Kenneth Branagh does audiobooks. It's just like, yes, I will sit here and listen to it. I remember I had read the Artemis Fowl books like three times, and then I discovered at my local library that there was a Kenneth Branagh recording of
Artemis Fowl. I gotta find that. He does
fucking Artemis Fowl. It's fucking amazing.
I've only ever listened to the ones. I think it's just Owen Colfer. It's just like, oh fuck it, get the author, just get him in.
Hire the author, I guess.
I'm currently involved in a massive debate over whether or not Jim Dale or Stephen Fry's Harry Potter audiobook is superior. And I'm firmly of the opinion that it's Stephen Fry.
It's always Stephen Fry.
Stephen Fry is the voice of Harry Potter. And, like, Jim Dale doesn't even give a shit about his voices. Like, Jim Dale's just like, I was the voice in the fucking Pushing Daisies. He's just got one of those dry-ass British voices.
Which is great. We're not bashing it. It's just when you compare it to Stephen Fry.
Yeah,
for fuck's sake.
I don't know why they get so many old, dry British dudes to do audiobooks. Like, whoever the hell it is that does the Game of Thrones audiobooks, ugh. It's like, it's Roy Dotrice, who's like a 150-year-old British man. And it works with Eddard's chapters.
Yeah,
and Davos's chapters, but they could they not hire like any woman to do any of the woman chapters? Like that's what the I'm listening to the Wheel of Time right now. That's what they did, and it works perfectly.
That's got to be a bit of a slog.
Oh, it's a huge slog. But like, if I did the Sword of Truth, I got to do the Wheel of Time.
That's fair. That's fair.
But like Roy Dotrice, props to him, is like reading the fucking Daenerys chapters, like. Daenerys was getting fucked by Khal Drogo. And then she got the fight. It's like, come on, man, this isn't working for me. Oh, man. Let's see who did the Aragorn audiobook. I bet it was Christopher Paolini. It was narrated by Christopher Paolini, and you can just hear him jerking off the whole time.
The soft rustling.
Aragorn. No, it's actually Gerard Doyle, whoever that is. A lot of these dudes only do audiobooks, which is such a cool career path.
Yeah.
Like, I remember, that's the only thing they've ever done. Like, I think they do theater, and then they do, like, one audiobook, and then that's all they do for the rest of their career. I so love that kind of ultra-specific arts career.
Mm-hmm.
Wish I could do something like that.
Speaking of ultra-specific arts career, One of my favorite memories of Aragorn actually is I found another book also illustrated by the same guy who illustrated Aragorn.
Mm-hmm.
John Jude Palancar is the illustrator, And it was this one-off book, and I'm like just going through chapters one day. I'm like, hey, I kind of like that illustration. Look at this. It's basically the same thing. And there was this crazy book called The Black Tattoo, and it was just fucking crazy. It was insane. I loved it. He gets killed. He becomes part demon, part human. He fights demons. There's magic swords. It's just amazing.
Here it is. Isn't that the plot of Naruto? Like, I'm reading it.
Oh, it might be.
Like, there's a part in Naruto where I think Sasuke gets, like... No, that's a curse mark. That's a slightly different idea. Slightly different. Mm-hmm. So I'm not gonna make Naruto comparisons when they're not warranted. Don't we always just find our way back to Naruto in the end?
In the end,
it's like an art Kevin Bacon.
Isn't that the great archetype of our generation?
Yeah, just like all art is derivative of Naruto.
Just like all imitations are actually Regis Philbin when you get down to it.
Yeah, it's just it's all the way back.
All of them, when you dig deep enough, at the core, it's Regis Philbin.
It's like that TV universe with the fucking St. Elsewhere kid.
Yeah.
God, that blows my mind. But Aragorn was like... I like props to him for actually... I think he made... Like, how old is he? He's 30-something right now. Because he did... I think people like bullshitted. They were like... He wrote it when he was 16, but he was actually like 23 when it was published.
That's true. He's 32. He's 32 at the moment. He's born in 83.
So he may have started working on it when he was 16. But, like, there's some things that... There's some writing ideas I've got that have been kicking around for that long.
Yeah.
I could just write one word. I could just go find anything I wrote about them then and been like, I wrote this when I was 16. Give me some money.
Polished it, but fuck it.
Wonderkind. Yeah, I feel like the first book was only as good as it was because it went through the fucking mill. Like...
Yeah.
I think he edited it like he went through like a few editors. Like he edited himself and then had another editor do a thing, and then when they released it for they finally like it was his big hit, he had it edited like another time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like the same thing as with like the George Lucas syndrome, like you have to be receptive to editing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that's like the only thing I'm learning in script analysis right now is how important it is to like have someone come in and be like, okay, all this shit's got to go.
This, no.
Take that all out. Unless you can conclusively prove to me why this should stay in, right out, get the fuck out of there.
Yeah.
I feel like George R. R. Martin's editor is more the author of A Song of Ice and Fire at this point than he actually is. It's just like their relationship has devolved into just manuscript pages flying through the, I don't know, or however is he sends them, like by AOL email, because he hasn't upgraded computer since 1998.
It's basically straight ASCII that he types in, isn't it?
Something like that. And like apparently his editor legit has to be like, no, you killed him, George. Like he has to keep, he's the one that keeps track of like the events and the characters that got knocked and moved around, because George R. Martin's not doing any of that shit.
Editor has his own intranet with his own basically like Wikipedia page of...
Apparently they like recruit superfans into...
They do.
Maybe not editing, but there is now like a core of like people who used to be super fans, like OG from the 90s.
Well, that's what they did with the world of Ice and Fire.
Yeah.
That's, it was like, mostly the super fans with a little bit of poking and prodding by George R.R. himself.
Yeah, like
right?
He oversaw the whole thing. But like that's why I love A Song of Ice and Fire so much, because it's only second to, I think, Lord of the Rings level of just... You know what? Lord of the Rings was like all exclusively Tolkien, but like A Song of Ice and Fire has like broadened into this amazing... Mm-hmm. Like everyone's got their own theories about it. Oh. And I honestly think that like... The audience has shaped this story a little bit.
I think so. Even if they've just canceled out some options by being too hardcore on a theory. Yeah. You know, they'll go like real hardcore on a theory, and George R.R. will be like, nah.
God, I'm so over the show at this point. I'm so over it.
I'm almost more into it, because now it's like they've been like, they're like, okay, we don't have We don't have anything holding us back at this point. Let's just fucking go. Let's just like, run with it and go.
It's not that I'm still invested in the show. It's just that any surviving links that I considered the show to be like authority on the books is gone. The show and the books are two completely different things at this point.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like how people who only watch the show don't give a shit about R plus L equals J. Like that was.
Why don't they get? They don't. They didn't give a shit. Why don't they? I don't understand. That is so important to me. It is so important.
It's the most important thing in the series. And I was on Facebook after that episode dropped because I was like, "Holy fuck! They finally, you know, confirmed it."
Confirmed. And no one cared. Nobody cared.
Who only watched the show cared. It was like, oh,
the book readers. The book readers were flipping there. Their fucking minds.
Yeah, that's like the biggest confirmation. Yeah. Yeah, it's probably, you know, that the show still has like enough ties so that you can probably trust those. Except for, didn't Martin confirm that Cold Hands is not Benjen? I feel like he tweeted something that was like,
I'm pretty sure he said straight up that Cold Hands is not Benjen.
So that's, Cold Hands is actually Jojen.
Aww.
Oh, man.
Jojen paste.
Man, I'm going to start an exclusive Song of Ice and Fire podcast at some point in direct competition to post Game of Thrones, which is the other one that I listen to. But like,
where we'll just riff on popular theories and
just
reference them. We won't even talk about them. We'll just reference them.
Yeah. But like, speaking of like a Song of Ice and Fire, Aragorn was pretty fucking dark. Like, I remember it being pretty violent.
There's some dark fucking parts. Do you remember when he took out like basically a whole army just by pinching a nerve in their brains with magic?
Oh yeah, that's right. That was actually, again, that's what I was looking for earlier, because I was kind of cool. Something
that was kind of cool. I'm not gonna lie.
Something about like he actually had a pretty damn good magic system. Like the language thing was a little weird, but when you really got down into it.
He had some shitty language. A lot of his ideas were very, very much stolen. I kind of like the overall story. I'm going to stand by it. I'm going to stand by the overall story.
It's very archetypal, right? Like, it's very archetype. It's procedural and it's satisfying. You know, it's like, it's like Redwall, you know, nothing's ever going to go really off the rails and be legitimately challenging, but it's really good. Oh man, that's the one thing he missed. Like, Christopher Paolini never wrote any like ridiculously descriptive food chapters.
Yeah, he did. Yes, he absolutely did. When he shows up at the elves.
Oh,
They talk about like this basically vegan elf meal for like pages, and it's like, okay, we get it.
Because like
elves
that is
don't like to eat meat.
That is required, and I just remembered like here. A dwarf feast too. Because like you have to have your food, your feast descriptions in there.
Oh, that's do you remember the dwarves that had like the steel knuckles, like drilled into their knuckles, and they were just like bashing people?
He had so many cool ideas, like cool little ideas,
like tiny ideas. Do you know what I hated? You know what I hated though?
Yeah.
What I hated was. And it's kind of a trend where people like to set up what is basically a medieval England like based world.
Basically.
And then they're like, nope, but I actually like katanas too, so we're gonna throw some katanas in there.
Oh yeah. Didn't he like
super swords? And so he popped in a super sword katana and it was just like, okay, come on. Sure.
Oh man. This is a Hattori Hanzo, so I mean shit. Hattorix Hanza sword. Onius. But like,
you pawned a Hattorix Hanzer? You don't pawn a Hattorix Hanzer?
To my brother Aragorn, the only man I ever loved, Murtagh.
Fuck. Only on this podcast can we put in Kill Bill references when talking about Aragorn.
Oh man, but he had like really cool. Didn't he copy and paste like an entire chapter of like describing sword making? Because there's this one bit in Brisinger where it's like this extremely informed description of sword making. Yep. And then literally in the acknowledgments, he's like, I literally just swiped that. Like, I swiped that right out of a book about making swords. There's the book. Go read it. I'm not paying for it.
Jacked it. References. Can't Whoop. Touch this.
Yoink. It's cool. He said yoink while he copied and pasted.
Like, Control C, Control V.
Except he had to write it out fucking longhand. He had like
he's sitting there under his tree.
He goes and gets a book library
on his
book.
Lap. Dick in his left hand, pen in his right.
Christopher, did he even fucking go to school?
No. Like, he was homeschooled.
What kind of 16-year-old has the time to do this shit?
He was like, homeschooled.
Oh man, all I ever did was draw maps. That was my thing. When I was 16 and like, maps. And I was like, oh, this is the fantasy series I'm going to write. I just drew maps. I should dig that out of like the dark recesses of my mind and my old Acer computer. See if there's still enough shit on there. But he had tons of really cool little ideas. Like when he actually got down into the mechanics of magic, like there's this one bit where Braum is like, don't be a he like kills a whole bunch of Urgles with wind and lightning, and Braum is like, don't be a fucking idiot, you can literally pick up like a tiny rock and send it right through their brain with no effort. So there actually was like a really realistic like and part of his magic training reflected the very realistic like energy balance you'd have to maintain.
I loved that you could tap into the world around you and suck the energy out of that and use it, right?
And then there was the Dragonheart thing, and I was like, oh, okay, fuck, now we're off the rails.
Yeah.
One of the
most genius things that they did was they funded the war effort, because in the magic world, everything takes the same basic amount of energy.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes time and complexity easier, right? Yeah. So yeah. One of the things that they did to fund the war effort was they made lace.
That's
with
right.
Magic.
Yeah,
because lace was very, very time consuming, but fairly easy to do. So they could pump out like a shit ton of lace really easily and sell it to all the like villages around.
Yeah, it's
on
like
the cheap and still use all of that money to fund the war effort. And it was just like, yes, you're using your head as to the own like the scheme of magic that you created.
He's making logical conclusions on his magic system.
It's smart. Yeah.
Yeah, like it's, I mean, who
if
else?
I can appreciate anything, it's internal consistency.
Magic systems are usually the hardest things to keep consistent.
Oh, yeah.
They're the worst. Like George R. R. Martin hasn't even touched it.
Nah.
He's like, I'm not dealing with that yet. It's just up in the air, could possibly do anything. And
magic? It's fucking magic. Magic is magic. Stay away from it.
Speaking of like magic
Sometimes
systems, the Sword of Truth. Have you read those?
No.
They're fucking ludicrous. They're insane.
Yeah.
Because the author is a legitimate crazy person who's like, I got to do this on a whole podcast episode someday, because his magic system is fucking preposterous. It's just this bullshit stream of consciousness that he's just making up on the fly. But, like, who do you think's got the best magic system out of all the fantasy series you read? Like, rate them, like, the most internally consistent and self-limiting magic system.
Internally consistent, self-limiting.
And, like self-limiting as in, like, they have good reasons why you can't just use magic to do anything.
That's hard. I'm always, like, fairly partial to Lord of the Rings, to be honest, because it is so different from most of the other magic systems.
It's like Martin, like it's kept mythical a little bit.
It's entirely mythical. There are two worlds. The closer you get to the ideal world, the closer you get to the ideal world, the more magic is in whatever action you do.
Yeah.
Is basically the magic system of Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the ways to describe it.
My personal pick for top magic system would probably be The Wheel of Time so far.
Okay. I've heard, okay. No, that's fair.
I am not done the series, and I have heard that it drags. But that's the worst I've heard, and I think like any series could be said to drag. But have you read The Wheel of Time?
I've read the first three books, and then I quit. It was too much for me.
Yeah, I actually do appreciate how it's kind of like Aragorn, like it's directly connected to your physical like endurance and ability.
Yep.
So like you could burn yourself out or kill yourself if you do too much or try to do something mm-hmm. that's too far. So he actually does like and it's one of the only series where the experience of using magic is described in like a cool kind of relatable way, like yeah. channeling.
Yeah.
But I mean, we'll see how I get with that series because it's pretty good. It's speaking to me so far. I'm liking it. But we'll. See if I can get to the shitty
parts.
I'm
also a big fan of the Porson series, which I have to say because I'm reading right now.
I have
right?
not read those.
There are three types of magic.
I love that. I always love that. The different kinds of magic. Except in Sword of Truth. Fuck Sword of Truth's magic system.
There are three types of magic. There's necromancy, which is basically just the ability to enter into death and to sense death. Mm. There's free magic, which is like neither good nor bad, but mostly used for bad.
Yeah.
Because most of the good parts of free magic were bound in what's called the charter or charter mm-hmm. magic, which is like a more orderly, more rule defined version of it that has like.
I limits. Love bound
it
magic.
It has limits. It is bound magic.
I love when in the books it's like this magic can only do so much because millions of years ago someone did this whole fucking thing and bound mm-hmm. it all to make a little more sense. I think that's what they do in Aragorn, actually. If I'm remembering correctly, magic was originally you could just think of anything happening, and if you were powerful enough with magic, you could do it.
You still can. You still can in the Inheritance series. But it got tied into yeah. language,
the ancient
which is
language.
Another thing that I love because yeah. like you start delving into how language affects the brain, and all of a sudden oh, yeah. you draw parallels to language and magic, and I absolutely love that.
There's one bit that I remember when he's training under like Yoda, basically. And,
yeah, I forget his name, but Yoda.
And he's like, yeah, the reason they did this is because it was a complete fucking chaotic mess. And you could accidentally use magic to do a whole bunch of different things. So the language was tied in so that if you said, burn that door, looked at me and thought of me, it would still burn the door and not me.
Yeah.
So I was yeah, like, yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. Good on you.
Yeah.
So it's like, I will always appreciate the amount of effort he put in to try and like tie the book down a little bit. But mm-hmm. it still seemed like a lot of really cool details pasted against a very vague story.
Yeah.
It was like...
I love... He set up this great, like, prophecy right at the beginning of the entire series.
Prophecies are dangerous.
Touched it a little bit halfway through, and then, like, left the rest for the last minute, and it was so friggin' rushed. That it felt terrible.
The last book was a rushed mess.
Mm-hmm.
I remember reading Inheritance, and the whole time I was like, "Wow, this is not good. This is like, oh shit, we gotta do." Well, how was it he defeated like, he defeated Galbatorix by thinking of the name of the ancient language, so he got power over all of it. So like, pretty much just the Matrix Revolutions. It was just like, you will win.
I thought it was more like. I thought it was a little bit more like the ending to the Avatar series.
Okay.
Where he learns how to spirit bend instead of just everything else.
It's handled so much better in the Avatar series.
Avatar did it way better. But, just, you know, I've always liked that sort of style of ending, right?
It is cool, yeah. But, like, you do have to handle it pretty masterfully if you don't want it to sound like a Deus Ex Machina.
You have to be delicate.
I just think Chris Paolini.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I also forgot that he reworks the magic of the original pact between riders and dragons
Oh, yeah.
Include both dwarves and Urgles.
Yeah, he just kind of throws that one in there.
Dragon eggs to hatch for them, too.
Just that. There you go.
Just have some of those.
There's a little Second Amendment for you.
Yeah.
And then doesn't
Third
he
Amendment,
just,
really.
Doesn't he fuck off at the end? Like, it's a fuck off ending, right? He fucks off? Like, he flies the grease car into the sunrise?
Yes, but with the promise that the new riders will come and, like, train with him.
Why does he have to leave again? I forget why he has to leave. It's like...
he's too powerful now, apparently, I guess.
I remember it being a complete bullshit reason. I also thought it was, like, a little weird that, like, Saphira got laid and he didn't.
Yeah, Saphira totally got laid and he did not.
Because the first thing that happens when Arya shows up is Saphira jumps right on that.
Yep.
That's immediately what happens. And it's like kind of awkward. Aragorn's like, wow, geez, I guess our dragons are sure getting it on up there.
To see if he has the iron in his bones and the fire in his belly to match her, is the direct quote.
Anyway, bye. I'll see you never.
And the dragons went, yep.
Oh, man.
And they went and porked off in a field.
I thought, oh, man, the whole thing with Aragorn being in love with Arya was actually handled a little bit better than I'd usually expect from an adolescent series. Because it totally ends badly. Like, remember in the second book, book or the third book, where he gets fixed, right? Like, he gets healed.
Yeah,
by the dragon elves,
and they kind of make him like half elf almost.
Yeah, they kind of turn him into an elf, and they take away his like wound, and he's like, "Man, I'm a lot sexier now. Maybe I'll give it another shot." And he completely blows it, like he just fucking chokes. And even Saphira is like, "Man, I told you this would happen." I think that's literally the line of like, "I told you this would happen if you tried to fuck her again."
She's four times your age.
And then it's just awkward for the rest of the... But he actually does bring up, like... What does he say? He's like, she's way older than you. And he's like, yeah, but I'm immortal. So, like...
We're both immortal?
That's only going to matter for about 20 years, and then it won't at all.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, he raises some good points. But, like, I feel like that lingered a little longer than it should have. And by longer than it should have, I mean at all past the whole... think like he's like the epitome of like the high school lingering fucking weird shit where it's like every year at the dance you bring it up again and the girl's like, man, you gotta stop doing this.
You just gotta stop, man.
I know that you worked out all year and you have a hockey flow now, but it's not gonna happen.
It's still not happening.
You really gotta like my friend Ashley's really nice. Oh, man. It's like just inject some high school awkward romance into your fantasy series.
Because he missed the experience. Because he was homeschooled.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I imagine trying to date homeschool girls like within your homeschool group is like even worse. Even worse.
I can't imagine what your social life must be like if you're homeschooled. I was homeschooled for 1 year, but I was like 8, so it didn't matter.
Yeah.
Like who? No. You don't give a shit about anything when you're 8.
Yeah.
At least he didn't like fedora it. At least at the end he wasn't like. And then they
m'lady.
And then m'lady.
Arya fell for him so goddamn hard.
He puts on like a dragon fedora.
I put on my dragon scale fedora.
My fedora helm.
My dragon mark glows.
Yeah, it's like, but like, good on him for not following through with that. Some little self insert there.
Yeah,
you know, he was probably getting all the young adult author groupies at that point. Man, that sounded way creepier than I intended it. Do you think that that's the world you live in if you're a famous young adult author? Do you think you're just on it all the time, just partying?
Probably. I wonder how much blow he did.
Oh, probably so much blow.
So much blow.
It was like that's why he had. That's the only reason he wrote his shit out longhand. Because he was just
so jittery.
That was the coke idea. the whole time was like, no, I know what I'm going to do, man. I'm going to write the whole fucking thing out with just with my hand, with longhand. The books are all going to be called, what, six letter syllables, six, I'll start with the letter E. And then he wakes up and is like, no, that's a bad idea. Man, it's weird how, like, Stephen King did a lot of blow, right?
Tons.
Like, he did, like, more than his body weight in blow every year.
Yeah, probably. Carrie Fisher definitely did.
Oh, Carrie Fisher, but
let's not touch that.
Oh, man. I always thought she was more of a, like, more of a stoner, like Harrison Ford.
Mm.
Harrison Ford, like, who is like, a lifelong stoner.
Yeah, Harrison Ford is a lifelong stoner. I'm pretty sure Mark Hamill was, like, shrooms?
I feel like when they were filming The Force Awakens, like, Oscar Isaac would have been, like, trying to be the cool guy and be like, hey, you old guys want to smoke a joint? And Mark Hamill and Harrison Ford would be like, I've smoked more weed than you fucking weigh. I've been higher longer than you've been alive. It's like, you need to come back with at least three more of those before we can talk. Excuse me, I'm going to go hit this pail.
And Carrie Fisher's handler was like, you stay the fuck away from them. Because you know she had a handler.
Oh, didn't she say, like, Donald Trump is, like, definitely on coke?
Yeah.
She was like, Donald Trump sniffling, that's a coke thing. Trust me.
That right there? That's coke.
That's, like, I mean, I love when people are, like, not weird about, because that's, I feel like that's the last step in overcoming, like, an addiction is, like, not being...
Not being weird about your addiction.
Standoffish about it. Like, like how Robert Downey Jr. jokes about going to prison.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, I think, I can't remember what quip he did, but he was like, no, they don't have French lessons in prison. It's like, so. Yeah, well, Aragon, everybody.
Aragon.
Man, it was like a flash in the pan thing. I feel like it's, the popularity was definitely... like waning by the time Inheritance came out, because I remember being super into it right when Brisinger came out, and then when Inheritance came out, I was like, oh yeah,
I was still pretty excited because I had followed it from the beginning.
Oh, holy shit, Inheritance came out in 2011.
Yeah,
I thought it was like earlier than that.
No, it took a long time for him to finish that series.
Standard though. Like, I mean, how long? It doesn't take, you know, a month to write a book. You got to spend a couple of years doing that.
Yeah. Unless you're Stephen King, where you can
bash
out several books a year.
Just do a whole bunch of coke and then shit into a fax machine and send it to your publisher and be like, print it, put my name on it. I don't care. Just send me more coke money. Send me money.
It's going to be fine. Don't worry about it.
Please, just I want to just be paid in cocaine.
Can we do that?
He just locks himself in a room and they like slide cocaine under the door and he's like slides out pages that are just half typed and half written.
Scribblings. This one just says Maine over and over and over again. It's
like, this one's about a fucking laundry machine. Whatever, we'll make a movie about it. And they did.
It's fucking genius. It's the best thing I ever did.
The Mangler, starring Robert Englund. It's about an evil washing machine. It's not even fucking evil. Like, it's a laundry press, right? So it's a big fucking machine. And in order for it to evilly kill you, you got to stick your hand and head like right in the fucking thing. That's not an evil machine. That's just a machine that's working properly.
It just has fewer safety regulations than we are used to.
That'd be like if Christine was an evil car just because people like got super drunk and drove it. Oh, it's an evil car because it kills people in crashes that they definitely caused themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, like I feel my like. God. Oh, 90s Stephen King. Oh wait, that wasn't even 90s. That was 1972. Oh shit. So he was always
crazy.
Like he was like Werner Herzog. Like he's either making a masterpiece or just shitting something out to appease the vultures. There you go.
So true.
Werner Herzog's either making the best movie ever made or doing like a goofy role in a shitty thriller.
Speaking of which, I slept through all of Jack Reacher the other day.
I heard it's not good. Did you see the new one?
Nope.
I heard the new one's like not good. Like the Jack Reacher is like weird and dull, but only, still like I like Tom Cruise enough to watch him do almost anything except
for
the
only thing I can say about it is like Tom Cruise still does his own stunts and it's pretty impressive.
I really respect his approach to acting, which is that it's his job and he fully commits to every part of it.
Yeah.
He doesn't like he doesn't think he's like Michelangelo or anything. Yeah. So he's like, I can do like these faces and I can keep myself in really good shape and I can run really cool and I'll say a line really cool. And then that's it. That's all I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm going to show up, put my hours in and go home and make a good movie. And I'm like, I totally respect that.
Yeah.
And sure. I think that really bleeds through. He's a very honest performer. So I watch him. I'm like, I'm really having fun with him because I'm like, this guy is like, he's just here goofing around. We're making a movie.
We're making a movie. It's going to be great.
Yeah. It's like,
watch my movie.
Just, I'm going to run with my hands really flat and everyone's going to enjoy it. Go get your popcorn. Man, I think his Twitter thing actually says like running in movies since 1980, whatever movie he was in for the first time.
Yeah.
Oh, Tom Cruise. How old is that guy now? Like 58?
Ancient.
He's like,
old balls.
He's got to be at least 55. He is 54. Okay.
Yeah.
He's
close enough.
He's right between my mom and my dad. But yeah. I mean, that's how I guess Chris Paolini approached writing later on. Just like, just get it out there. Just do it.
Just fucking do it.
Just pound it down. Write it out.
I had six great ideas and I spaced them out. The rest of it, just mostly Star Wars.
I feel like he had the whole. Actually, no. I read that on his Wikipedia page that he had the whole plot like plotted out, which I guess you kind of have to do. Like, I'm sure George R. R. Martin knows exactly what's going to happen vaguely at the ending.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like he plotted the whole thing out and then just banged like a 7-gram rock. And just sent in what he found in the morning. Like, some of it was like drywall. Like, he had to cut it off. And then, like,
cut it with drywall.
Then he asked Arya to the elf prom again. Oh shit, I already did that.
Fuck.
Oh man.
I was about to make typing noises, and then I realized it's more like scratching and also dry shuffling.
Scratching, dry shuffling, and then a pause for like 30 seconds every once in a while. And they put that right in the books. Like, it's like his recharge period is right in the books. Like, it's just a blank page. And you're like, wait a minute.
Is there a weird splotch on this page? Let's just fucking ignore it. Keep reading.
Oh, they edited that out of later editions.
That's the only thing that the editors did in the later books was they cut the pages where it came on it.
The original cut of Aragorn was just like Chris Paolini plays Aragorn and has no pants the whole time.
It's actually a Super 8 film.
This was actually made before the books. It was made in conjunction. You know, like Fight Club was?
So Saphira is what he named his own cock.
This is my cock. She's a female dragon.
This is my cock, Saphira.
I tattooed it blue. I jerked off so many times that there's a weird mark on my hand now. There's hey! There's a weird
spot on my hand. It glows every once in a while.
Anyway, what's your next series? It's going to be called, it's just me jerking off.
We're cutting out the middleman. Cutting out the dragon.
Okay, I got to think of a better quip. What is Chris Paolini's next big series?
What?
I don't, like, where do you go from there? Like, is he going to come out with, like...
According to his Wikipedia page, where you go from there is writing more inheritance books.
Oh, he is totally gonna write erotica.
Because he hasn't written since 2011, and he's running out of coke and jerk off money.
He's totally gonna write like weird ass erotic fantasy fiction, like Sword of Truth. Like it's all gonna devolve.
Sorry, as of 2016, Paolini working on a science fiction novel, tentatively entitled #.
What?
Sia SOS.
Oh man, that sounds like a piece of shit.
It's gonna be so bad.
That sounds like, oh, you get it? It's a #. The villain in this book is a cell phone. And jerking off and doing coke is illegal, except for the one hero who...
they banned jerking off and doing coke in my hometown, and you know what? I'm gonna show them.
His name is Jack Galt. And he wants to, and he believes that everyone should have the freedom to jerk off and do coke.
Jerk off and do coke. Underneath trees.
Everyone throw your cell phones away. Chris Paolini said so.
Do coke. Do coke.
Everyone do coke.
In a good joke.
Oh, we gotta cut this off before it gets really weird.
What happened to this podcast? I feel like we started out much more professional than this.
Oh man, he looks like he does coke too. Have you seen this picture of him?
Oh my god,
he looks like every business major who was up all night doing grams, and he he does the whole like he looks like he does the Wolf of Wall Street thing,
totally.
Right in the middle of his business class. All right, this has been. This has been the Chris Paolini roast, Comedy Central roast of Chris Paolini. I've been your roast master, Linus Kloss.
And I have been Ebon Capone.
The vice roast master. Do they have like positions on the Comedy Central roast? Like there's roast master.
Yeah.
But is there like a vice roast count?
The vice roast, roast lieutenant.
It's a feudal system of roast, yeah. Of roast royalty.
Yes. So you would be roast king, and I would be like a roast lord.
Yeah. You'd be like roast advisor. Like, yes. Like worm tongue.
Like roast Roy.
I'd be like this shitty king who doesn't do shit, and you're like whispering, you know, riffs into my ear. And I'm just, and everyone's like, man, I don't think the king is roasting from his own throne. Let's just see how it works. Anyway, this has been Aragon. You stay classy, Chris Paolini. Just keep your end up. Keep doing coke.